Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
I'm big into Formula One racing. I think sports are a really great way of sort of helping you understand the type of ethos you need to be successful in business at these types of levels and higher. And it's what I see in leaders above me. They have this sort of like winners keep score sort of mentality. And I want to embody that, but I also don't want to lose my humanity. But I think that's where women need to like lean in, is take big swings. So I say it a lot because I want people to hear me say that.
Why did I become an executive coach? I saw lots of great people fail to get ahead at work, while their much less talented peers blew right past them. That made me furious, but also curious. What were great people getting wrong? It came down to helping them re-examine what drove success and then helping them make critical shifts, one hard truth at a time.
Feel like you're doing everything you were told, but you're not moving ahead at work nor having the impact you seek? Then welcome to 97% Effective with Michael Winderoth, where we skip feel-good, happy talk and engage experts in pointed conversations about what it really takes to move the needle at work and your career. So if you feel stalled or frustrated or seek that extra edge as you move to the next level, then look no further. This is the Hard Truths Playbook you never got.
Hi, I'm Michael Winderoth, and you're listening to 97% Effective. My guest today has had a stellar life and career, but the past 3 years have been truly breakthrough. I'm excited and honored today to speak with Stefania Steph Mancini, who was recently promoted to run Intuit Canada's consumer business as GM and VP Product. Since joining Intuit 3 years ago during the global pandemic, she and her team have turned a solid business into a stellar one, driving three consecutive breakout years of double-digit growth. But the real story we're going to discuss today is not about accolades, although she and her team have been scooping them up at an unprecedented rate. The real story is how she led the transformation of herself and her larger team. If we wind the clock back 3 years, Steph was like many of you listening out there, wickedly sharp, creative, passionate, consistently delivering results. A solid career. But she wanted more because it felt at times that she was hitting a wall, both in her ability to increase her impact and even with career recognition. And that was one of the reasons she left a very senior position in the advertising world to join Intuit Canada. So we're going to dig into the important shifts that she made. Stefania Mancini is general manager for Intuit Consumer Group Canada, overseeing all product, marketing, and revenue-generating activities, TurboTax, Credit Karma in Canada. Intuit Consumer Group Canada provides AI-enabled technology solutions and professional expert services to help over 5 million Canadians. Prior to joining Intuit, Steph brought two decades of award-winning marketing expertise and leadership positions at Click Health, Say Media, Rogers Media, BMO Financial Group, and AGF Funds, Inc. That's who's who in the ad world. Those roles included collaboration with luminaries Michelle Obama, Margaret Atwood, and the photographer Platung. Canadian, Steph holds her degree in English Literature and History from the University of Toronto, speaks French and Italian fluently, and on the important personal side, is a stage 4 cancer survivor and has an amazing blended family, 4 children with her husband, Anthony. Steph, I cannot tell you how long I've been waiting for this interview. Welcome to my podcast, 97% Effective.
Michael, thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor to be here.
Steph, you and Intuit Canada have been crushing it, as I said at the beginning. Congratulations, the double-digit growth.
Thank you.
It's nothing short of a massive accomplishment putting Canada, your group, on the map, both inside your company and also in the wider industry. But I want to start here, as I mentioned, winding the clock back. Take us back 3 to 5 years. You're a marketer. You're an expert storyteller. Just paint us a picture of where you were at in your career, what that was like, and what was going on.
Yeah, I have always been an ambitious sort of person. I always wanted to do more. And I'd arrived at this place in my career where I'd kind of achieved what I'd kind of set out to achieve. And I felt that there was still more to go after. And I realized at that point that what got me here was not going to get me there. That there was a missing link between where I wanted to be and what I thought I could be and where I actually was. And there was a whole series of steps that felt nebulous or scary and just really uncertain about how to move forward and take that next leap of growth.
So let's dig into what you felt was missing before we dive into key things that transformed you. One example of kind of what was nebulous or scary?
It's this feeling of like not really understanding how to get somewhere and being worried that you're just going to stay where you are and feeling disappointed within yourself that you could have achieved more, but you never really did. And so for me, that was almost worse than failing, was sort of sitting in stagnation. I'd rather fail at something and say I tried than to actually give up before I even went, you know, and figured it out. Mm.
And that switch when you went over to Intuit, was that, were you recruited for that? Did you apply Intuit? I mean, the short story of how that happened.
I pursued it. I had a friend of mine who had made a recommendation and said, you would be amazing at this organization. And I reached out to the hiring manager on LinkedIn, just introducing myself and saying I knew somebody who spoke highly of the organization and of him as a leader. And within a week, we were having an interview, and a week, 2 weeks later, there was a job offer, which was, I mean, Intuit moves very fast when it comes to recruiting great talent. And I was fortunate to have experienced that roller coaster. It was an awesome experience.
And then the roller coaster, you joined right in smack middle of the pandemic. And Toronto, as I recall, was very heavy on the lockdowns. So for the first almost a year, you were almost not meeting folks down in corporate or even some of your colleagues.
It was longer than that. It was 18 months before we actually saw each other in person. And it was the hardest experience coming onto a team and really not having the camaraderie of being in person. The idea of building a team, having team building events, gaining trust with new people, really uncovering what the challenges were going to look like when you're joining a team and knowing that change is sort of in the air. So all of that was sort of extra difficult because you had this screen that you were kind of living in. But at the same time, there's an intimacy that happens because you're in the screen and you're actually zooming into somebody's house. And so I got to meet people's kids and they got to see my home. And sometimes they saw my naked child running around. And that's just kind of, you know, it builds a level of camaraderie that you don't necessarily get just coming into the office. And so there were negatives and positives to that experience. And I try always to look for what those positives could be to use those to my advantage in terms of building those relationships that I needed to be successful.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's like there's some upsides here to the perceived downsides and taking, you know, you're in that situation. I mean, let's go right at it. This is what people really want to hear and why they turn into the podcast. Break down, what were those missing elements that you identified or stepped into that, I mean, those who are at this, like you said, good, solid career, but want more, what they should be thinking about or applying?
Yeah, I think for me, I always struggled with the concept of not playing politics, of being really authentic and being really straightforward. And I am a very straightforward person. I live by Kim Scott's radical candor concept. My team hears about it right away. And so I think there was a dissonance for me around how do I be direct and honest and authentic, but then play this political game where maybe I don't necessarily say what I really think because I need to impress somebody or do something for somebody. And it was that deconstruction of the idea that really changed the way that I look at how to move forward. Instead of thinking about it as a righteousness on my part and a disingenuousness on the part of somebody I see as playing politics, it's really about being effective. And what is it that you are trying to accomplish? What is the other person trying to accomplish? And how can you partner together to figure out how to make each other successful? And that literally changed the whole mind frame for me. And it unlocked a huge way to move forward in a way that I hadn't experienced before.
I mean, you're identifying there what I see in a lot of clients of this kind of what may be perceived as this compromise of values. And you talked about, right, this part about feeling wanting to be right, thinking about how do you be effective. To bring that down to the real practical level, and again, not to betray anything that's going on in the company, but like, could you give us an example of what one of those situations might be where you shifted the approach, maybe how you would have done it before and how Steph did it that turned out to be more effective?
Yeah. So I think the old Steph would have tried to keep pushing on being right and trying to convince the other person to see it from my perspective. And through some really great mentorship at Intuit, I was able to actually change the paradigm to understand what the look, what it looks like for somebody else and how to really build that relationship based on trust to unlock both of us. Because where I was taking it was probably a little bit more combative than it needed to be. And that wasn't intentional or negative on my part or the response back either from the other person. But it was churning out that way because I wasn't willing to compromise my particular view. In learning how to change that for myself, I rebuilt that relationship from the ground up, where it was once something that was a sore spot for both, has become actually a great friendship now and a true partnership. And that's been actually one of the most rewarding experiences of my career, where I didn't walk away from the relationship or write that person off. It really turned into something meaningful. And there's a personal relationship and a connection there that I couldn't have imagined when I first started that journey.
So, I mean, it sounds like you kind of took a step back and saw things from their perspective, thought about what compromise might look like. It's easy to see in retrospect, but it's a process. Anything else in there and how one goes through it?
Yeah, I think the hard work is really around the building trust, especially when you're coming from different perspectives, learning not to push your objectives so fast so that you don't shut down the other person's point of view, really looking to understand what is their point of view, sit with it, understand where they're coming from, why they might see it that way, and then see how you might be able to shift either your opinion or theirs to even approach one step forward, right? In a complex relationship where there isn't necessarily deep alignment, it's moving an inch and maybe it's going a little slower than you personally would like, but it is moving forward and that's the win you've got to take. And when you do that work, I think some of the most magical relationships get formed. Mm.
And you mentioned building those key relationships, but you also alluded to kind of a mentor who helped mm-hmm. you through that. And this is a big theme that you and I have talked about. And one of the things you have said is really critical is building critical relationships and having mentor. And you also alluded to having a sponsor.
Yeah.
Can you share more about, you know, how that has helped you and how you've gone about doing it?
Yeah. This has been the first time I really had a true mentor and sponsor in my career. And it has been a really life-changing experience. I think the relationship was one where we both learned a lot from each other in terms of give and take and sharing perspectives and being open and honest. But having somebody at a table where you're not at, advocating for your ability to do something, to take a swing on you, has been the accelerant that has really made a difference in my career. And I will forever be grateful to that sponsor, to what they've been able to deliver for me. And also what I've been able to deliver back, right? You know, it was through that relationship that he was able to scale upward and take on different mandates, knowing that I was able to capture all of the work that he had sort of moved away from and that I would be able to deliver on that and keep that promise for with his name on it as well.
And you mentioned this was kind of the first true sponsor you had in your career. So obviously sounds like an amazing individual who had that kind of mindset and attitude. Is it a matter of being lucky? I guess that's it's an obvious question out there. Like, hey, luck of the draw, who your boss is.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I'll ask that straight up. Is it a matter of being lucky, or are there things that you have to be looking for to identify that person?
I'm not going to lie. I think just the fact that this has been the first person that's really been an accelerant, it has been what I will call a little bit of magic. You'll hear me use that word a couple of times because I believe in there's just a spark that sometimes happens. And there was an affinity right from the get-go in terms of our ability to connect that I haven't really had. But I do believe that sponsors can be had without that magical first connection. I would say that sponsors are really there to light up your career and theirs. And the first sort of building block of that is having somebody that they consider to be, you know, a racehorse and that can deliver, that has a high say-do ratio, that is somebody who can really take the swing and knock it out of the park and do that consistently. And you will attract people who will want to work with you, who will want to help you because your success becomes their success. They're building teams, they're building reputations as well. And so how do you contribute, co-create a rapport that is beneficial for both of you? And it feels transactional to say that, but it's actually much more of a relationship where it's like helping your friends. You help each other, you guide each other when things are going sideways, and they help you take that next step up, and you help them take their next step up.
You're no stranger to delivery, and so that was a key element of it. But I'll also ask, you're amazing in person. To go back, you were over a year in lockdowns where you didn't get to meet people. Your boss is down in the States. So any specific tips of ways that you can deepen that in a remote environment?
Yeah, I think this is where my sense of authenticity really helped me. I care about people. I'm a people first person. And so I would check in for no reason. I would book 15 or 20 minute meetings just to say hi with absolutely no agenda. And I would make it clear. We would have like coffee chats or let's grab lunch and have Zoom together. So like there's ways to do that. And, you know, now that we're out of lockdown, that practice continues in different ways because I work in Canada, but the leadership team that I report to is based out of California. And so that's a remote relationship as well. So many of the meetings are in Zoom. There is nothing like being in person. Let's start there. But you have to continue to build on those relationships, even when you're not in person and you're on a screen, and finding little ways to use Slack to message people when you're thinking about them with no expectation of some sort of need or request. Starts to build truth that you care about me as a person, that you notice what I do, you notice the things that I'm trying to accomplish. And that recognition goes a long way, especially with leaders, where I can tell you in a leadership position, it often feels lonely. It often feels like you're out here taking big swings. And does anybody notice, you know, it's not just about a bonus and a paycheck at the end of the day. It's about making sure that you're making a difference for people. And sometimes you don't get that feedback. So having somebody recognize you actually feels really nice.
It's interesting. I often think that, you know, moving to the pandemic forced us to exercise these muscles we didn't know we had.
Yep.
And really expanded kind of the playbook, call it the leadership toolkit, or ways to build relationships. And I really like those examples. On Slack, when you're talking about this, because one other guest brought this up, but like, is that just pinging people's, acknowledging them?
Yeah. I did it the other day. I noticed a colleague of mine who's been really, you know, taking some big swings, making some really big moves, and just really driving and pushing change on his team. And I sent him a note and I said, hey, I see you. And I think what you're doing is amazing. And, you know, I just wanted you to know that I think you're doing a great job. And I want you to know that I see it. So, you know, and he just, you know, sent me a heart back, but that's, you know, a moment where we connected because I don't have an agenda around needing something from him. I just noticed that he's doing a great job.
You've been listening to 97% Effective with your host, executive coach, Michael Winderoth. If this interview is making you think, make sure to share it with a friend. Now, back to our interview.
Now you have mentioned, I'll call this out twice, taking big swings.
Yep.
I mean, first, are we talking about a baseball analogy here? Or when you say big swings, is that golf? Or you're in Canada, so I'm just curious.
I mean, I've just taken up golf, so it could be golf, but usually it's baseball, you know, big kicks, whatever sport you like. I love sports analogies. I'm big into Formula One racing. I think sports are a really great way of sort of helping you understand the type of ethos you need to be successful in business at these types of levels and higher. And it's what I see in leaders above me. They have this sort of like winners keep score sort of mentality. And I want to embody that, but I also don't want to lose my humanity. Mm. But I think that's where women need to like lean in, is take big swings. So I say it a lot because I want people to hear me say that.
Well, it's coming through loud and clear. And I know this is another area that you have said has been really important to you, which is call it take big swings. But you have said, and I wrote this down in a previous conversation we had, was taking big risk fearlessly. And you alluded to taking a stand, having a strong point of view. So say more about that.
Sure. I think the most dangerous thing you can do in business, in work, in anything that you, in life, actually, is to take the easier path. The path that is probably already laid out, well laid out, the road well traveled, that's the one you want to avoid. The road that's a little more dangerous, the road that has requires a bit of courage from you, probably a lot more than you think, is the one that you should take. And I advocate that specifically for women because I find we're often taught not to take the risks, to play safe, to be the good girl and get the straight A's, and that's more important. And actually, failing is one of the most important skills you can have because you're gonna fail. And the ability to pick yourself up is actually the thing that's gonna determine whether or not you're successful in the end, because the people who are successful are the ones who keep going, irrespective of the failures. So keep swinging is all about that. You go to bat, you miss, you get back at bat, and you swing again. And it's that mentality that's led us to, at Intuit, this is the third year running, hitting double-digit growth in a company that had not seen that before this time. So that's, you know, it's taken a little while to get people to believe, but this year we blew our numbers out of the water because we were like, finally, people are starting to believe that we can do this.
And again, rubber meets the road, thinking about this very practically, and not to share any, you know, anything that would be corporate confidential here, but an example of kind of a risk or a strong stand you've taken that may have been unpopular and how you navigated that or played out.
Yeah. There was a firm belief that a type of offering was not going to be something that the Canadian market would be interested in. And based on just insights that we had at our fingertips, we were like, let's test this theory. The challenge was, in order to test that theory, we would have had to spend a lot of time building a new product offering. And what we decided to do is actually achieve it through a partnership. We tried the partnership and it didn't work. Straight up, it didn't work. And the people who were naysayers at the very beginning of that experience kind of perked up and said, see, we shouldn't have done it. Why did we do that? We wasted all this time. But really, what we learned from that experience was that the market was willing to bear this opportunity. We didn't execute it right. It wasn't perfect, but we learned something that we never knew before. We now have other ways to serve our customers that we never considered as part of a pathway in the Canadian market. And that is huge. That is a big unlock. And that's leading us to pursue lots of different opportunities that I think before we would have just shut down. And so even though it was a quote fail, it has unlocked our ability to really change the paradigm in terms of what we are able to do. And it also raised the heads of leaders who kind of said, well, Canada's sort of sleepy and we'll just keep the lights on and do things, you know, the regular way. And I don't mean leaders in the US, I mean leaders within Canada. And I think that opportunity sort of changed the game for them. And they saw that there was an opportunity to change the way that we played within Canada and really make sure that we could deliver something totally new and that we should push ourselves to do that every year. And that's been the mantra, and we've seen the success as a result. Mm.
And so you've also mentioned a couple of times how you advocate and recommend for women. And as soon as you start talking about having a strong point of view, taking a stand, you know, because of stereotypes, oh, this is pushy, you know, out of your place. And, you know, while that may be seen as leadership or having teeth or in a kind of male perspective, it can be used also to hold women back, right? And so yep. Is there anything there in terms of kind of navigating that so you don't get the downside of the stereotype that can hinder and hurt you?
I think this is, again, where fearlessness comes in. You just have to do it. Like, there might be a price, right? There might be a price where you are not welcome in that particular environment because you're considered too aggressive, whereas other leaders who are men might be seen as great leaders. That should be a sign that that's not the company for you and you should move on. But before you do, I think what women should really do is dig in a little. Don't just walk away. Really start to uncouple that and start to think about, if I change my approach slightly, not my directness, not my expectations, not my requirements for success, will that yield a slightly different response? So don't take down who you are, but maybe try and experiment with a few ways that you could show up differently so that you don't just walk away from every time you have a challenge. And I think that's where women have to walk a line of when to try and when to know your worth and walk away. And that can be hard. I haven't found that line yet.
But it sounds like you also do a fair amount of experimentation.
I do. It's part of that swing, right?
Yeah.
If the idea of failure is not the thing that stops you, then everything is an experiment. Hmm. Everything is an opportunity for you to learn. Everything is an ability for you to take a new insight, a new piece of information to build on your success. And so if the mindset is about experiments, then there is no failure.
Yeah, really powerful mindset. I want to ask you, Steph, stage 4 cancer and going through that, you really go for things and, you know, live fearlessly. Was there any impact of that on how you approach work and life now?
Yeah, I would say, like, I think the context of my diagnosis matters. I had just arrived at the most perfect place in my life. I had just married the most wonderful man of my dreams. We had just literally spent 13 months building our dream house, and we had moved in, and 4 months later, I have a stage 4 cancer diagnosis, and I was told I would be dead by spring. And I had, you know, at that point, 3 children that we shared together who were small, all under the age of 10, who are watching, you know, this whole family kind of disintegrate just as they got it. So that was really, really tough. And it caused me to dig deep and really understand, you know, what was important to me. And it's interesting because one would assume when you're on your deathbed, will you think about work? And I did.
I love your frankness.
Michael, I thought about work. I know you were like, where's she going?
Yeah.
But I realized that for me, I really love what I do. I really love the impact that I get to make. I love working with smart people. And part of that is so fulfilling for me that family alone was never, ever going to be my total fulfillment. And that clarity has helped me move into this new stage of my life where I'm making some serious trade-offs. Like, there's a lot of travel in my world now. My children are growing. I've had a baby since that cancer diagnosis, another little miracle. So all of these things have kind of forced me to really be clear about which balls are going to bounce and which balls are going to break. and to prioritize making sure that I don't break anything, but still meet the needs that I have to achieve and drive at work and have all of those parts of myself that are important as well.
We're going to have another podcast where you talk about how you manage it, because I don't know. That's another one of Steph's superpowers. I think you're very frank about that. There are trade-offs, but you also know which are the most important balls that should not drop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me ask you too, when we talked about what are some of these missing things that you felt nebulous about, you also felt very strongly, and you said that it's important, the delivery, which you have emphasized, but, and this is, I will take this as a marketer myself, how to package that up in a meaningful way, even when you don't win, I think was the phrase you used. Okay. Explain that.
I don't know if it's like marketing or if it's mindset or what it is, but all I can say is that, again, if you are living in a world of experimentation and you approach every problem that's in front of you as an opportunity, as a challenge, as a way to provide insight, then people get excited with you as opposed to point at you if you fail, right? So when I walk into a room and I have, you know, my excitement around, look at what we've done. Yes, we didn't hit this metric or that metric, but we've shown this new thing and that new thing. And that's going to lead to this new opportunity where we see this potential. That is something to get really excited about. And so how you think about the problem is how you reflect that problem to others. And whether or not you even characterize it as a problem is really, I think, meaningful in terms of how people perceive what you're doing. It's also important to tell a really good story. And people want to hear a good story. If you walk in with a eye chart of data and facts, not really going to compel people. But give somebody a real stat and then tell a story around it and how you've changed something, that is compelling. People want to do things. People want to support others who are driving change and who are making good things happen. And that's who I want to go work for. And that's who wants to promote you. And all of those pieces kind of come true in the way that you bring that together.
So there's the part about how you share that in stories, analogies. I imagine you mix in some sporting analogies too.
100%.
But I'll ask this because it's like your energy is very important and what people pick up. So I want to ask you kind of this executive presence thing, right? It's kind of like this invisible force that no one can really explain, but you know it when you see it. You have that, right? When you come in. But I also want to ask it because people don't know or can't even see if they're watching this on video or listening. You're not 6'8". And I think there's an interesting story here that I learned right before we were beginning about Stefania, how we remember that. Can you just share how you, in the nonverbal way, without telling the story, like how you transmit energy, presence?
You know what? I am every day grateful, truly. Every morning I wake up, even after a sleepless night, which last night was, I wake up totally excited about what I'm going to be doing today. And when I know that there's days that are going to be challenging, I walk in with the mindset of today is my opportunity to change the way that we think about this. Mm-hmm. Today is the day that we get to actually reframe this into a whole new way that people have never thought about. Like, this is an exciting, pivotal moment. And if you can sell that to yourself, if you can believe that truly, then you can bring anybody on with you. And I think that's what people are afraid. They're afraid to bring their, we talk about this idea of bring your whole self to work. It doesn't necessarily mean like let it all hang out, mm-hmm. although sometimes I do. But the idea of being fully yourself and bringing your energy, your passion, your excitement, all of that stuff speaks to the person that's driving the work. And people want to go, again, work for leaders who are trying to make changes happen that are exciting and new and interesting. That's where people want to sort of drive to.
Yeah. And the research is quite clear. Emotions are contagious. That's one of the reasons the energy you bring. I love my conversations with you. They are fantastic. Steph, As we're coming to the end, I have a bunch of small questions I want to ask you.
Uh-oh, here we go.
But first, before we go into my lightning round and have a little fun here, we covered a lot of ground from where you felt nebulous and wanted more to how you started to achieve and live that and the energy that's, you know, powered into a Canada. But anything we didn't cover that I didn't ask that you feel like I should have?
I would just encourage, you know, anyone who really wants to make a difference to like swing for the fences and, you know, leave a little room for that magic to happen. Like, don't hold so tightly to this dream that you can't see the opportunities in front of you, and just keep swinging. And eventually you will get to where you need to go. And it's an exciting path just getting there. Mm.
That mindset again. So, Steph, will you bear with me for a few kind of lightning round questions here?
I'm scared, Michael. I'm scared.
Oh, don't be scared. Let's just have some fun with it. I want to go back because I alluded to, you know, I'm being here in Spain. I know you've got Italian roots. And so I didn't know if it was Stefania or Stefania, because I always call you Steph. But you said Stefania, and now I will never forget it, because you said, being 5'10", a teacher said, it's Stefania because she'll step on you.
That's right. That is how my teacher remembered the pronunciation of my name.
And how people will not forget. So this part about being
absolutely
memorable.
Grade okay. six. That's when I got that name.
Grade six. Okay.
Grade six.
All right. Some lightning round questions here. All right. So let's have a little fun with this. Number one, oh, Canada. One hard truth about Canada and Canadians that non-Canadians really need to know.
Ooh, not all of us are hockey fans. Like, come on, the Raptors? Can we say the Raptors?
So Raptors, and then again, you allude to baseball a lot, so.
I know. I don't know why. It's the swing for the fences thing, I think. But, you know, a swish doesn't have the same appeal.
Right,
I don't know.
Right.
I know.
Swing for the fences. I think that's going to make its way into the title of this episode. Okay, question number two. Let's scan forward. Mm-hmm. Who's the one person or luminary you have not yet met or worked with that you will? And I know Steph will down the road some point.
That I will. Oh, my.
You will okay. things into happening. So I know it's going to happen. Right. And I know you All aim right. high. So
my entire team knows this. And we joke about the fact that the only reason I sponsored or I wanted to sponsor the Raptors is because I want to meet Drake and I want to work with Drake. So
Drake,
I'm like,
are
he's
you
in
out
Toronto.
There?
I'm in Toronto. We can make this work.
All right. And I'm going to insert one here. Toronto, when we go, where's a cool place that we should go eat?
Oh my God. That's like asking which one is your favorite child. You can't do it. Toronto has some of the best food in the world. It is a cosmopolitan, incredible place where you can have like Asian, Latin American fusion. And, you know, there's so much beautiful food because cultures here are so mixed and so integrated with each other that I couldn't pick just one. It would be literally a sin. I would mislead you deeply. But I have a list that I will share when you come visit me.
All right. So that is the invitation to come see you.
That's right.
Next one. Let's reach back. And this is from one liberal arts grad to the other, right? So English lit and history.
Yep.
How's that most helped you? And is there a favorite work that you think everyone should read?
Ooh, the favorite work. Okay, let's do the easy one first. When I went to the University of Toronto, I was hanging out with some engineers, which has never changed. And they all told me that I would be using my history degree to put my unemployment into historical context. That is what I was told. But I would say I've done pretty good.
And let me tell you this one, because this was cited by the president of my college. He shared it. I don't even remember when, but it very much always stuck with me. And he said that, you know, liberal arts majors are disproportionately represented in the C-suite. Unfortunately, the C-suite is not an entry-level position.
No.
So the road is winding, but yeah, you get there with it and the skills there.
Yeah. The skills, honestly, I think what it's taught me is scrappiness. Mm. Creativity always, right? Yeah. But scrappiness, because you come out of school and you don't necessarily have a career path that is sort of put in front of you and you've got to go build it yourself. And I think that's been part of the DNA that has made me who I am. I couldn't tell you what my favorite works were. I have poetry, I have literature, I have everything.
Just give us one. Paradox of choice, right? Too much choice, we'll never read any of them. So give us one.
18th century Alexander Pope, anything by Alexander Pope or Milton. So like, okay. That's crazy stuff.
Okay. All right. So that's digging us deep, but shows the depth as well as the breath that Steph Mancini has. And a final question here. You alluded to your geekiness and hanging out with engineers. We live, as always, probably gets overused, right? In very interesting times. And I'd love to hear from you because marketer, leader, is there one surprising way that AI, generative AI, has accelerated things for you personally?
I think it's actually less for me personally and more about the idea that there is such a huge opportunity right now to change the paradigm of how things work in the future and why I feel so passionate about making sure that women have a seat at the table, because without women at the table, we'll miss the next revolution of opportunity around how AI gets disseminated, how it gets developed, how it gets built into the new systems that are being created. So I think I feel super lucky to be at this inflection point, at this place in my career, at this company that is really leading the charge around AI and how it's going to affect people's ability to access finances, to get their taxes done, to do all kinds of things that are critically important for their lives. And while I'm not an engineer, I have the most respect for the people who are doing this kind of work because it is going to be transformational. And I just feel lucky to be part of this next wave of revolution in our society. I think it's very exciting and needs to be really well thought out. And we all need a seat at that table to make sure it reflects who we are.
And I'm glad you have a seat at the table and you're thinking so much about it. It's pretty exciting, also pretty scary. But again, back to what you said, it's that mindset of how you approach it and look at it.
Yeah.
Steph, you are out there speaking more, clearly got a full-time job, a full-time family. How do people see you, reach out to you?
Just hit me up on LinkedIn. I take requests. I am always talking to new and interesting people, so I will happily connect with anybody on LinkedIn.
Steph, this has been even more than I expected and wanted it to be. Always amazing to talk to you and to be able now to share out your experience and your insights more broadly.
Michael, thank you for having me. It's been such a great pleasure, and I always love hanging out with you.
Yeah. So Stefania Mancini, Steph, GM, VP Product, Intuit Canada's consumer business. Awesome to have you on. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to 97% Effective, where we skip happy talk and help you break through and ascend one hard truth at a time. Help others discover this show. Leave a review and rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you like what you heard, you can get free resources, including the first chapters of Michael's book, Get Promoted, on his website, www.changwinderoth.com. That's www.changwenderoth.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.